I don't think it's a morbid curiosity. I just think it's really interesting. It's really relevant. It's really hard to define, and just it really happens a lot dealing with these issues. So we'll talk about now, probably this year, maybe another year, on end-of-life therapy, and then we'll start talking about defining death. Even more exciting, when are you dead?
Do you think your book's going to be controversial?
I hope not. Every book's controversial. I'm assuming people will get upset about it. People like it.
People are picket signs.
Picket signs sell books. So anything that sells books, if they put a link to the Amazon, you want to blast me on the blog, as long as you put a link to the book, go ahead.
We can pick it for you if you want.
You think that'll help?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Absolutely. Maybe for extra credit.
Well, okay. Our class will be like right outside this window of front to me.
That'll help. Okay.
We'll
no debt. No, that's good for the problem. Okay, so we're talking last time about the Rama, right? Who does the Rama apply to? Do you recall? So we had a bunch of different people. We'll just write them out again just so we have them listed.
We're starting at the board.
So the Rama says, right, you can stop the woodchopper, let's say. So who does that apply to? So the Rama says the phrase, go say Sisman Aruch Velayu Chaliyi Parvi. He's a ghost for a long time. So what does that mean? So that could either mean a real ghost ace. He's referring to an actual ghost ace, right? Rabbi Blythe thinks it refers to a real ghost ace. Sorry, J. David Blythe. Refers to a real ghost ace. Sorry, that's how I write in my notes. And we saw that there's maybe a non-standard ghost ace. Not a real ghost ace, standard ghost ace. There's a non-standard ghost ace. Right? So the Rama really, not a ghost ace, right? The Rama applies broader than just a ghost ace. I mean, yes, a ghost ace, but also other people as well. So who are those other people? So we talked about this last time. We had the Yaskel Avdi. I'm just putting on where we talked about it last time. He was talking about a dying cancer patient who's certainly not a ghost ace necessarily. He could have 6 months to live, right? So even a dying cancer patient falls within the realm of the Rama because he's dying, even though he's not a ghost ace. So ghost ace we assume to be actively dying. We talked about Herschel Schachter, who thinks the Rama's rule here is just an example of your permissibility to choose that which you want to be pikuach nefesh for yourself, right? It has nothing to do with the ghost. The ghost is just one example where, well, we don't really know what he wants, but we can assume that this is what he would want. We spoke about Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, and he says the phrase, I'm going to put on the word, Tov Moso Mechayev, when death is preferable to life, right? And that's what the Rama is talking about, and because death is preferable to life, so he actually explains, so there's no mitzvah of Hatzalah. Right? So the question is, why happened to the mitzvah of Hatzalah? / Pikuach Nefesh. Right, where'd it go? So Rav Schachter will tell you that what? What will Rav Schachter tell you? What happened to the mitzvah of Hatzalah? Anyone? So Rav Schachter will tell you that I have the right to choose what my own pikuach nefesh is. We're assuming a normal person.
Okay.
However we define normal. You choose your own pikuach nefesh. Within limits, right? We'll just put within limits, meaning if you're normal. Now, Rav Schachter thinks has an interesting definition of normal, but it's normal. Right. Fine. And Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg says, Tov Moso Mechayev, when death is preferable to life, so there's no more Hatzalah. Right? If life is so bad, that death is preferable to it, so there's no mitzvah to continue that type of life. Okay? So then we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says the Rama is talking about a person, right? We talked about that every mitzvah has a cost. Right, all mitzvahs have costs, time, energy, money. Right, every mitzvah that you do requires something. The question is, how far do you have to go? So So the question is, how far does the mitzvah of Hatzalah go? So we said previously a positive mitzvah. How much do you have to give up in order to fulfill a positive mitzvah?
One tenth.
No. Right, 20%, yeah. Not 1/20. 20%. 20%, a fifth. Right? You have to give up 20% of your all your assets in order to fulfill a positive mitzvah and to not violate a negative mitzvah, a negative prohibition.
Everything.
You have to give up everything. So he says that pain and suffering. Can be greater than kol mamon. Right? Is more than all of your assets. Having to go through tremendous pain and suffering is worth more than all of your assets. So you don't have to do that in order to certainly not fulfill the mitzvah of Hatzalah, which is a positive mitzvah, which means 20%, and then not to violate the prohibition of Losam or Damrayacha, which may require all your assets. Right? Losam or Damrayacha is a negative prohibition that you violate passively. So the question is, how much do you have to give up for that? So is machlokas haposkim? Is it like a positive mitzvah 20% or a negative mitzvah all your money? But Rav Moshe says that pain and suffering is greater than kol mamono, and so a person suffering greatly doesn't have to do everything. He won't violate hatzalah, he won't violate lo samano damrayacha if he's passive, right? None of these poskim are going to allow you to do anything active, right? The prohibition of lo tirtzach still applies. We're just trying to get around the mitzvah of hatzalah and make a prohibition of lo samano damrayacha. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says the following: a goseis is an example of some to person. He says a goseis is someone who is dying and there is suffering. And whether or not the doctors can see that suffering, this person is suffering greatly. And he says it just happens. It's spiritual suffering, person is suffering. So a goseis is suffering immeasurably. And therefore, he's an example of someone who will not violate the mitzvah of Hatzalah or the prohibition of Losam al-Damrayecha by not pursuing additional therapy. So he's saying this is it's a goseis, but a goseis plus more. You can have someone who's, let's say, a person right with pancreatic cancer, with Rachman al-Litzam, we don't really have very successful therapies for. So does he have to undergo, and let's say he's suffering greatly, should he undergo chemotherapy, which is going to cause him pain and suffering, which is all likelihood is only going to give him an extra month or two. So would he have to do that according to Rav Moshe? If he chose not to, would he violate a mitzvah?
No.
No, because he's suffering greatly, right? He's not dying today. He'll die in 3 months. He's not a goseis. Right? A goseis is someone who's, we call, actively dying. He's not a goseis. But because his pain and suffering is greater than kol mamono, he does not violate the positive mitzvah of Hatzalah, he doesn't violate the negative prohibition of Losam al-Damrayacha. Yes. Okay, so therefore,
so shouldn't it also be an exception in terms of how much money?
So you have a choice, you can, but you don't violate the mitzvah of Hatzalah if you choose not to expend more than 20%. Right? You have a positive mitzvah to do 20. You have a positive mitzvah to shekel lulav, and you say, look, I have $100 and the lulav costs $20, so you have to do it. If the lulav costs $50, you say, I don't have to do it. So through here, the mitzvah is costing you $50. You're saying it has to do. He's saying Gokh Nevesh should be greater. The fact that you can violate prohibitions for it means that you should also be willing to have to give up.
Yes.
So, it's a good theory. It makes a lot of sense. And maybe that's what Losam al-Damrayecha is coming to supplement. And say, if you say Losam al-Damrayecha requires you to give up 100% of your assets. Right? Question is, okay, but 100% of Rabosha says, but no. When he says kol mamono, it doesn't mean everything.
Yeah.
It means only all your money. Terrible pain and suffering is greater than all your money. The question is, what does kol mamono mean? Right? When you assume like this, does it mean everything? Is that just like a euphemism, meaning do everything you possibly can to not violate this prohibition? And therefore you'd be stuck. You have to keep doing every type of therapy. Right? And Rav Moshe says, no, it means all your money. There are certain things that are worth more than all your money. So maybe that's what Losam al-Damrayacha comes to do. It comes to make it from 20 to 100, but Rav Moshe says that not more than 100. So to make it more than 100, Rav Moshe, you're going to be a little bit more stuck. But I see your idea. But maybe that's what this is coming to talk about. Any questions about Rav Moshe Feinstein? A little bit important. He's an important posek. Okay? That's where he gets it from. And the last person we talked about was the Tzitz Eliezer. He says the Ramah is referring to someone without Deus Atzmi. Intrinsic life force. So someone who has no intrinsic life force, whatever that means. So you can then, that's who the Rama is referring to. Person without intrinsic life force, so then you can stop therapy. He says there's no reason to keep him going. So you have to realize that Tzitzel Eliezer is of the opinion you have to do everything to help a patient, always. You have to do everything. He understands kol mamonu means everything. You must do everything always to keep someone alive as long as possible. Right? So the Rama is a bit difficult for him. So what? Well, how can you ever stop? What do you mean stop the wood chopper? For the Tzitzel Eliezer, you have to go ahead and chop wood yourself. So why is that okay? He says because he has no intrinsic life force anymore. He's not really... He's barely alive. You don't have to keep him. You don't have to keep him alive, right? So this is the Tzitzel Eliezer. So that's what he says. Okay. And so the Rama is referring to someone who has no intrinsic life force, and therefore the mitzvah doesn't apply to him. So I mentioned last time, and I'll repeat it again because it's important, that this Tzitzel Eliezer is often misquoted, right? So the Tzitzel Eliezer is asked, okay, given that you have to do everything to save every patient always, can you put the patient on a ventilator on a Shabbos clock? Right, and the ventilator will go off at a later time. Okay, so I won't be doing anything; it'll be passive, it'll be withholding, not withdrawing, and it should be permissible. So Tzitzel Eliezer says, "Okay, if we're talking about someone who the Rama is talking about, someone with no chiyus atzmi, so when the ventilator goes off, you don't have to turn it back on. He has no chiyus atzmi; you don't have to save him, right?" And he goes, "Once he has no chiyus atzmi, just shut it off. What's the big deal?" So that everyone quotes it to say you can use a ventilator on a timer. The problem is that in the next tshuva, in the next chelik, that's in chelik Yud Gimel Siman Pei, as we said this last time, but it bears repeating because it's so frequently misquoted, I found. In chelik Yudal, Dr. Avram Seinberg says, I don't understand. What's chiyus atzmi? So he says, chiyus atzmi is someone who's breathing and has a heartbeat and his brain's working. So long as any of those are functioning, so then he has chiyus atzmi, he has to do everything he can. Right, so he's breathing, he has a heartbeat, and his brain's working. Any one of the three is enough to make you alive. So the guy in the ventilator is not breathing, right? Because maybe, or he is a little bit, but let's say he's not. And I don't know what his brain's doing, but his heart's certainly beating, because if his heart's not beating, why put him on the ventilator? Right, the ventilator just gives you oxygen. So Dr. Steinberg says, so when the ventilator goes off, he has a heartbeat. Otherwise he wouldn't have been on the ventilator to begin with. So you have to restart it. So he says, yeah, you have to restart it. He says, so who are you talking about before? He goes, well, someone whose heart's not beating. He says, well, someone whose heart's not beating, we want to put on a ventilator. He says, that's your problem. I'm not the doctor. He says, I don't care who you do and who you don't in such a patient without a heartbeat, so you can shut off the ventilator. So he says, so who's the Rama referring to? The Rama says someone who's alive you can stop something from. It must refer to someone with a heartbeat. He says, not necessarily. The Rama's talking about someone who just looks like they're alive. No intrinsic life force. He just looks like he's alive. Something external is making him look alive. And therefore, you can stop doing that, because he's not really alive, so it's okay. Or maybe he's like...
Who would think he's alive?
I have no idea, because the pounding of the wood chopping is making him look like he has a pulse. He doesn't get into that nitty-gritty that Tzitzel Eliezer, but Tzitzel Eliezer says that a heartbeat is part of chiyus atzmi. So long as you have chiyus atzmi, you have to keep going until the end, and only when you have no chiyus atzmi can you stop. So he doesn't say this point, but it's logical, that if you have a heartbeat, you have to continue. If you don't have a heartbeat, you can stop. You don't ventilate patients without a heartbeat, so it almost doesn't exist. He says, I don't care if it exists or not. So he says, the halacha is a theory. The Rabbah wasn't worried about heartbeat, he wasn't worried about any of these things. He didn't have this technology.
Sure, he limits the Rama to, like, nothing.
Yeah, the Rama almost doesn't apply.
Yeah.
So he's misquoted in the situation of the ventilator.
Yeah. He says, you can put the ventilator on the timer, and you don't have to restart it when the guy has no chiyus atzmi. That's what he says. So, you have to remember, then you have to understand his definition of chiyus atzmi. It means you have a heartbeat, right? Every patient on the ventilator has a heartbeat, otherwise he's dead. And this goes back and forth with Dr. Steinberg before. It's not clear exactly what he's talking about. And so Dr. Steinberg clarifies this in Chelik Yudal, in the next Chelik of Tzitzel Eliezer. So it's just important to realize. So other poskim who allow ventilators on timers, for whatever reason, may allow it, but the Tzitzel Eliezer allowed it in very, very, very strict circumstances, which almost aren't relevant in real life.
One of the three things, meaning he has a heartbeat, or he's breathing, or his brain...
Or he's moving. I mean, intrinsic life force. What do you consider to be intrinsic life force? Everyone here, I don't have to feel your pulse, now you have intrinsic life force. You're moving around, you're alive. So, right, we're talking about patients who are sitting comatose. So, how do I know if he has intrinsic life force? If it's coming from within him. So, if his brain's working, his heartbeat, or his breathing, something is happening from the person who's lying in bed himself, not from outside. right? It's not like if you take a corpse and you ventilate the corpse, so is he breathing? No, that's completely extrinsic. So you're saying this guy also, the breathing is completely extrinsic. You're right, but he has some intrinsic force going for him, otherwise his heart wouldn't be beating, he says. So, yes, the Tzitz Eliezer says it, but it's in very, 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 very limited circumstances. And given that we repeated it now three times, you can assume this is an important question that you need to know the right answer to. Okay. V'dayla Hakima Birmiza. Okay. So, now that we know who we're talking about, what can you withhold? What is the Rama saying you can stop or withhold? So we made a list of what are relevant medically, right? So let's do that again because it's important. So it's hard to. I don't know if you can read if I write on here, but we'll try. Yeah. So we have to support various systems. So what systems do we have to do? So there's cardiovascular, lungs, respiratory. I mean, you have to support a lot of things, but
liver.
For the kidney.
Kidneys.
We're just naming things that need to be.
What are we supporting in end of life patients? What body systems are we supporting?
Nutrition, hydration.
Nutrition, hydration. So we'll leave liver in there, right? There's a nutritional hydration. So what do we do to support all these needs? This one's the easiest. You give oxygen, right? O2. And you put them on the ventilator. Right, on the ventilator, we talked about dialysis for kidneys, hemodialysis. So, for the heart, there's several things. So, you put a patient on a pacemaker, but a pacemaker requires surgery. Right? It's not something that you can do it in an end of life patient, right? But it's cardiac surgery. So, it's relevant, you can do it. It's called a cardiac pacemaker. You can do CPR. And CPR means, again, pounding on the chest and shocking, right? You can have an AICD. That's what I can't remember the name before, I apologize. AICD, automatic internal cardioverter defibrillator. That's an internal pacemaker, right, that will shock your heart if it stops. So instead of when the person lies on the floor and we come over the pedals and say clear and shock him, you have this implanted. Someone thinks that this person's heart's going to stop at some point randomly. Right, for whatever reason. So we implant this inside you, so it will shock you. So it's an AICD. And one more thing which we didn't mention, which is just important, vasopressors. I don't know what vasopressors are.
They open your arteries, or your veins?
Arteries.
Yeah.
They raise your blood pressure. They actually constrict your arteries. Right, so you need to have a blood pressure, otherwise if your blood pressure kind of bottoms out, so if there's no pressure in the system, if the heart keeps pumping, but the arteries don't contain the pressure, the blood's not actually going to go anywhere, right? So that's really a problem. So we have to keep the blood pressure up. So vasopressors keep the blood pressure up. Vasopressors are very important medically and halachically because, we talked about the difference between continuous and discontinuous therapy, which might make a difference between withholding and withdrawing. So the cardiac pacemaker can be continuous or discontinuous, right? If it's knocking every single beat, it's continuous. If it's only kicking in when the heart rate goes below 40 or 60, probably 40, then it's discontinuous. CPR is certainly discontinuous. I only do it when needed. And AICD is discontinuous. And the vasopressor is continuous. It's an IV drip that's dripping into the guy's arm, right? But that IV bag's going to empty. Right? That IV bag's going to empty. The question is, do I have to replace the IV bag? So that's discontinuous. It's both continuous and discontinuous, meaning while it's flowing, so then you might not be able to stop it if you think that you can't stop continuous therapy. You may not have to replace the next backup. One other thing, a ventilator. Ventilator, continuous or discontinuous?
Continuous,
right? So back in the day, what does a ventilator do? It's providing oxygen. So where do you get oxygen from in the hospital? Where's oxygen from? So not a tank. It used to be in a tank. You used to have an oxygen tank, and you attach it to your ventilator, and then you ventilate the patient. And what happens when the oxygen tank empties?
Yeah.
No, you replace it. You get another one, and you replace it. The alarm goes off, you replace it, right? The question is, well, that then becomes like the vasopressors, right? It's continuous while it's working, but once it stops, do I have to replace it or not? We can talk about it. Maybe I don't have to replace it once it stops. So now you just plug it into the wall, right? And there's oxygen flowing in the pipes. So now it's completely continuous, because you just take the tube, plug it into the wall, there's an oxygen port, and you get oxygen all the time. It doesn't stop. So now, ventilators have become continuous therapy, right? As opposed to, that's why they had to come up with this hop with a timer, to make it discontinuous. Because right now, ventilators are continuous. So you'll see tshuvas, if you look through them carefully, that they're talking about when you replace the tanks and the oxygen tanks on the ventilator, that doesn't happen anymore. But it did happen
still,
in the back.
We still hold it. You know, we can still read,
No, it's important to read it to know that, to understand the difference between continuous and discontinuous, if that exists. But practically, just halacha l'maaseh, it doesn't happen.
Because of the timer and the minute temporary.
Well, if the timers are okay, then you can accomplish that.
Oh.
Right? But without a timer, this is certainly called continuous. Now, maybe you can stop it, maybe you can't stop it. We'll talk about that. We're just identifying, is it continuous or discontinuous? Now, a ventilator is certainly continuous in the normal situation. You want to come up with a chav to make it discontinuous, so A, is that permissible? And B, is that true? We'll see. Okay, and so kidney hemodialysis is certainly discontinuous, right? It's every couple of days. You could, right, there is a type that is CVVH, which is, don't ask me to remember the acronym, but that's actually continuous hemodialysis. Very rarely used so much. What about nutrition and hydration?
IV.
Right, you can get IV fluids, not in vitro fertilization, IVF, in vitro fluids, feeding tubes. You have a G-tube. Feeding tube goes into the mouth or into the nose, into the stomach. A G-tube goes straight to the stomach and requires surgery. Both are continuous and discontinuous, just like an IV fluid, right? So long as it's flowing, it's continuous. But then I have to replace the bag. I have to add more food into the tube, right? So that's, in that way, it's both. Fine. So let's talk, Lamaisa, what are we stopping and who is stopping and what do we think? What is the Ramah referring to? Now we know who is the Ramah referring to. Now what is the Ramah referring to in today's day and age, okay? I know I can remove the salt and I can stop the wood chopper. I can't remove the feathers and I can't put the keys. I don't know anyone in any hospital who's using any of those therapies nowadays, so we have to figure out how is this relevant. So, we're going to differentiate between 1, 2, 3. Sorry. 4 types of things, okay? Maybe 4 different categories of poskim. Okay, we'll have different things. So this is going to be category 1. And Rav Chaim David HaLevi. Now all these people are modern, right? Because we're talking about ventilators. He says that, wait, the Ramah said you can remove the salt, right? He says if you can remove the salt, you can remove the ventilator. What's the difference? The guy's going to die, you're right, he's going to die. But the Ramah says you can remove the salt. So you can remove the ventilator also. He thinks they're completely parallel. He says he doesn't see what the difference is. He doesn't see a difference between withholding and withdrawing, right? Between active and passive. The Ramah said remove the salt. That's active, and that's withdrawing. So you can stop everything, right? That's what Rav Chaim David HaLevi says. This is not accepted. Rav Goren, Rav Shlomo Goren, who was the...
Is
this
the same category?
Yeah, in the same category, right? This means pretty much everything. Rav Shlomo Goren was the chief rabbi of Israel, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, who was also the rabbi of the of Tzahal. Rabbi Rafi Peretz, who is the current chief rabbi of Tzahal, I think is speaking in the Beis Medrash as we speak. I guess he's going to visit for whatever reason. He's actually a very interesting guy. Anyway, so he explains why it does not work. So he says, but even if that's what the Ramah said, what happened to the mitzvah that's Lashem Voselo and Lo Samal Damrecha, right? Even if that's what the Ramah is referring to, okay, but what happened to the rules? Right, you can't just forget about them. He said, so Rav Goren explains that he thinks it's beneficial for the other guy. If it's beneficial for the person who's dying, it can't be a violation of Lo Samal Damrecha. Right? So Rav Goren assumes, sort of like Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg that we said before. And in fact, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg says it. He's the same person, right? Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg. Right? He said, Tov Moso Mechayev. Right? He said, the Ramah is referring to a patient whose death is preferable to life. Right? If death is preferable to life, he says, there's no violation of Lo Samar Al Damrecha. And the Rav Goren explains why. Lo Samar Al Damrecha means, this guy needs something to help him, and I'm not doing that to help him. He needs help, and I'm not helping him. If the guy is not helpful for him, then I don't violate Lo Samar Al Damrecha by not helping him. right? So we're going to have this pseudo-objective standard of Tomo Sumikaya. I say pseudo-objective because we're not going to allow every nutcase to decide when his life is death is preferable to life. There's some objective standard, whatever that means. How you determine it, I don't know. We don't really pass him this way. Nobody really passes this way. Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg himself no longer passes this way, and Rav Chaim Goldberg later, Rav Zalman Goldberg no longer around. So no one really passes this way. So it's hard to know how practically they would proceed. But it's an interesting shita, right? It makes a lot of sense. It fits in well with the Ramah. And there's no lo samo because Rav Goren says, when Tov Mosa Machayev doesn't exist, Rav Goren explains why. Because lo samo will say, yeah, lo samo means you're not doing that which could help the other guy. If it's not helpful for him, there's no violation of lo samo.
When did who initially talked about the salt and everything?
The Ramah.
So did the Ramah say that was in any circumstance?
The Ramah says, go say zman aruch v'lo yuchal yipari. So we don't know who he's talking about. So we have a list of 6 people we could be talking about. And even when we're talking about those people, so what are we allowed to do to that person?
So basically,
practically today.
So basically,
this is like a today. This is Lamaisa today. How are we going to parallel those very strange medical therapies now?
So Rav Chaim David Halevi basically skipped the...
Well, I'm not telling you who he's referring to, but yeah. He has a whole discussion of who he's referring to also.
So he's not just saying... He's not
but
just,
you could, in theory, plug that into anybody here. Right? This might stand independently of that list, right?
Right.
Whoever we're referring to, what can you do to them?
Okay.
Right? It happens to be Rizal Mechemi is on both lists, and he therefore fits into this camp. But it happens to be that many of those poskim who tell you who he's referring to also say what you can do to them.
Okay.
Right? So because they're writing a tshuva about it. So they're telling us who it refers to, what you can do. So Rav Chaim David Halevi does have a discussion of who we're referring to, he's just not relevant for us right now.
So
it's not newer insightful, so I didn't quote it.
Okay.
But let's assume he's talking like Rizal Mechemi or could be over Yaskel Avdi or whoever we're talking about. What you're allowed to do may be independent from who you're allowed to do it.
Right, so Rav Goren quotes.
He also has a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
No, these are all three independent people. They all have discussions of who you can do this to. I just don't. They're not particularly insightful for a discussion. I don't want to.
Right, so what does Rav Goren say?
He explains why.
So he's quoting him or not?
No.
Just using
he's saying the same idea. Right?
So Goren or Rav Goldberg say the same thing?
Practically, yes.
So
Rav Goldberg's the one who... I'm just being a little bit picky.
That's okay.
But they both say that you can remove all therapy.
Right.
That they both say. Right? Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg says, why? Because Tov Mosa Mechayev. Which Rav Goren accepts. That's reason. So what happened in the midst of Lo Samar Olam Re'echa? So Rav Zalman Chaim doesn't really address it so much. So Rav Goren says, why? Because he says there's no mitzvah hatzala. You don't have to save someone when death is preferable to life. So that's mitzvah shemosa. So I'm just being a little picky. You don't have to be that picky. But he addresses one question, he addresses the other question, but they complement each other. So as long as you know they go together, that's fine. He says, what happened to Lo Samo? And it doesn't apply when it's not helpful, when that which you're not doing isn't actually helpful for the other person. Because we have some objective standard of Tov Mosa Mechayev. We should be clear, Rav Zalman Chaim does not pass in this way today. Okay? He writes explicitly, he does not follow this psak, even though he said it. And almost all poskim reject this psak halacha. Okay? So halacha lemaisa, almost all poskim disagree with this. I'm not saying all, I don't know all. It's largely rejected. And Rav Zalman Chaim himself, who was one of the supporters, has since retracted, at least in print. Okay? Fine. So that's the first approach. So they think you can remove clothes and write everything, because it's just easier. Also, I'm sorry, one more thing, one more caveat. You can never do anything that's going to kill the patient. Right? We have...
Which is the one to actually remove things
when
keeping alive?
No, I can't... Right. So we have Vashevo Zolo, Lo Samo, and Lo Sirtza. You can't violate Lo Sirtza. Right? You can never violate Lo Sirtza. So... You gotta figure out whatever you're doing doesn't violate Lo Sirtza. Okay? Fair enough? No matter what you can't, so you always have to, that you're never allowed to do. right? If he's a ghost six, if he's dying, or I can choose my own thing, or Tomo Shachayev, or he's suffering, all these things I can refrain. I don't violate the prohibition of Lo Samen Adam Re'echa when I stand idly by, right? Or you're going to the Chaim David Halevi and sometime when I remove these things. I still can't kill people. So I have to say that's not killing someone. We had this discussion last week, right? So let's think about it. Right? If you can remove everything, why is that not killing someone? If I remove the ventilator and he dies 5 minutes later, did I kill him?
Apparently not, according to...
Okay, there's going to be a machloka, so you can take a position. It's okay. Whatever you say will be backed up by some posting. Don't worry. Almost certainly.
No, it's yes, been one.
Hmm? I didn't kill him? Why not? I stopped his ventilator and he died.
Because you're doing him a favor.
Okay, hold on. No, so I didn't violate Los Samud, you're right. But I violated Los Yertzach.
You didn't violate Los Samud because...
You're right, I didn't violate Los Samud. What happened to Los Yertzach? Right, you have to deal with all three.
Yeah.
Now this is, right, in the Ten Commandments.
So then...
When Yehori Kal Yavar...
Right, so Los Yertzach, but maybe Los Yertzach has only to do with the active...
You have to define it in some way.
As opposed to the removal of an impediment.
Right, so Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg tries to prove this whole thing that Lo Tirtzach requires you to do something actively to the person's body. If I don't actively do something to his body, I didn't violate Lo Tirtzach. Okay? So here I'm just shutting off a machine.
You shut off his airplane while he's...
Right, so okay. So you're right. So now it's... Or I take off his life vest while he's...
Right.
Well, he's doing so. I might not violate Lo Tirtzach. I might violate Gram Ritzicha. I can't. Not only can I not kill someone actively, I can't even cause your death. Right? That's also prohibited. Min haTorah. So he has to come up with this very. It's a very complicated article he has there to try to explain why it's Lo Tirtzach, why it's not Lo Tirtzach. So even Rav Zalman Nechemya, when he said it originally, he said, "Look, if I shut it off the ventilator and he dies immediately, I killed him. He's got to at least be able to last a little bit on his own." But I would have said, "Fine, you didn't kill him. You caused his death, no."
That's a little bit.
Right, so he's not sure. He's not sure.
3 seconds.
So he's not sure. He says a couple of minutes, but he's not sure. But it's really, I mean, it's hard. He says, and then he's trying to explain, well, you didn't do it to his body, so it's not Ritzicha, but it could be Gram Ritzicha. You caught, even if you didn't do the violation in the Torah of Ritzicha, you violated Gram Ritzicha. You caused his death. So he has a very convoluted way to get around the Gram Ritzicha problem.
He tries to explain it.
I don't buy it personally, but that doesn't shouldn't mean anything that I don't find it compelling. So what? I think Rabbi Willig actually finds it pretty compelling. His argument. He has an article about it in Beis Yitzchak. He thinks the logic makes a lot of sense. He doesn't pass on that way necessarily, but he thinks the logic makes a lot of sense. But it's hard to buy. So that's relevant because the next category is passive versus active. Which is effectively, I have to learn how to spell in English, withholding versus withdrawing, right? With a big but. So a person chapter takes this approach. What's the but? Let's talk about that. So shutting off a ventilator kills people. Right? You can't kill anybody. You can't do something actively that's going to kill him. He's like, that's killing him. Shutting off the ventilator and the guy dies. Look, if you shut off the ventilator and the guy lives for 5 more years, well, I didn't really kill him, right?
Why?
So, we assume not. He lived for 5 more years off a ventilator.
It's a practical difference between
the right, but it's logical to assume that I did not cause his death 5 years ago.
You poisoned him with a slow-acting poison. You give him a...
Right, it's hard to make that argument.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make that argument. At some point, you can say he lived 120 more years... I killed him? It's hard to say. It's hard to say. So, and certainly when he dies, immediately when I turn off the ventilator, I did kill him. Right? According to Rosh Hashanah. So there's going to be some middle ground between immediately and 120 years. We have to figure out where that is. But if it's soon, then he thinks that's usher. What's soon?
Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
That's tough sell in terms of just deciding whether it's both yourself or not both yourself.
It's Gram Ritzicha. It's Gram Ritzicha.
For if it's a long time?
No.
If he's
not breathing on his own, and the minute I shut it off, his heart stops. That's hard to say it's Gram Ritzicha. I actually killed him. Let's say he lasts for 5 more minutes. So Schechter would want to say, I don't know if it's Lo Tirtzach. It's certainly Gram Ritzicha. And he lived for 120 years. It's not Gram Ritzicha. I didn't cause his death 120 years from now. So there's some place in the middle, not sure exactly where it is, but if it's going to be soon, meaning a terminal patient, if I stop his ventilator, will in likelihood die soon. So the most famous case in American law on one of these issues is not Nancy Cruzan, Karen Ann Quinlan. It was decided by the Supreme Court of New Jersey. Her parents petitioned to stop her ventilator. This was a big deal back in American law, right? Even in American law, you can withhold and withdraw medical care, right? That was always assumed, not always assumed, but assumed for a while to be correct. So is ventilation and nutrition and hydration medical care? Can you withhold that? Is that medical care or is that basic needs? So the court decided they could remove the ventilator. They removed the ventilator and she lived for 10 more years. She started breathing on her own. But it's an important case nonetheless, but she actually started breathing on her own and lived for 10 years like that. And then she got pneumonia and died. People don't realize that that's what the outcome of that case was. She didn't actually die. Fine. So Rav Shechem says you can do passive things. Withholding versus withdrawing. So what can you do according to Rav Shechem? You do not have to initiate CPR. Well, that's practically, right? Everything is easy. Pacemaker that's working actively, you couldn't shut off. Right? CPR, you would not have to initiate. Because CPR is something I would have to do actively. I don't have to do it. AICD, what do you think AICD? Can you shut off an AICD? Quinn Rochester?
Sir, what do you say?
Automatic internal cardioverter defibrillator. It's inside your body. It's already planted in. Okay, let me just explain what it is again, and then we'll talk about it. I actually asked him what he thought, but I wasn't sure. That's why I asked him, because I thought, yeah. So it's in your body, and it will sense if your heart stops, it will shock you. But if your heart's not stopped, it's just monitoring.
It's not continuous.
Well, it's monitoring continuously. Is that what you're saying? Because it's monitoring continuously?
Like it's ready.
It's ready and waiting? So Rav Shechter thought, no, you could stop that. Because let's say I'm standing there ready and waiting to do CPR.
It's just like saying it's the same thing as CPR.
Right, it's the same thing as CPR. So he thought you could stop that. You can't stop it while it's shocking the guy. But it's not working. Okay. The AICD is in the body, and the guy's dying from cancer. So right now it's just monitoring the heart.
How is it the same as CPR? Isn't CPR when he's not breathing?
When his heart stops. So when his heart stops, this will shock his heart. When the guy's heart stops, I will start compressing his chest. Right? Meaning, yeah. So if I'm standing next to the patient like this, yeah, waiting for his heart to stop, according to Rochefort, would I have to do it or would I not have to do it? I'm standing here waiting. I'm standing here waiting on top of the patient, waiting for his heart to stop so I can start CPR.
Why should that be any different than you knowing CPR? And
right. So he says it's the same thing as the AICD. The AICD is monitoring, but that's not the function of the AICD. The function is to shock the heart. So long as it's not shocking it right now, right, I can stop it. You can stop it by not, you don't have to do surgery to stop it.
So
it depends on how pacemaker is working. If a pacemaker is shocking your heart every moment to keep your heart going, so then yes. If a pacemaker is only going to kick in when your heart rate goes below 40, so then it's the same thing. Okay? Everyone understand the difference? If it's not continuous, so right, it's not working now, so I'm preventing it from happening. And what about vasopressors, according to Rochefort? Right, the pressors are keeping your blood pressure up. So as long as the drip is coming in, you can't stop it, but you don't have to refill the bag. Practically, most patients will die after that within an hour or so. Not exactly. But a patient, depends why you need the vasopressors. Many patients who need vasopressors, this is actually going to stop. This is actually going to kill them. Not kill them. They will actually die when the vasopressors stop rather quickly. So a ventilator is continuous, which actually is going to say you can't stop it. But if a patient's on the ventilator and vasopressors, it's almost a meaningless discussion because if you can stop the vasopressors, so then you don't have to, right? So this is all considering we know who we're talking about again, right? Not every patient, a patient who fits in one of these categories. Okay? What about hemodialysis?
Don't have to restart it.
You don't have to restart it, you don't have to go to the next one, and feeding tube also. Now, you wouldn't have to supply these things. Now, all of these things, so long as you're not causing the patient suffering, right? You can't be making his life worse. So if the person's going to die from dehydration because you didn't give them fluids, so in all likelihood, he doesn't fit in one of these categories of who you can do it to. And B, dying from dehydration is supposedly extremely, extremely painful, and you're not allowed to do that to someone.
Even if they're not conscious.
If it's painful, you can't do it. You can't, right? Low tier stuff means don't Kill him, don't hasten his death. Causing him intense suffering is going to hasten his death. You can only do those things, right? So we're holding fluids back from someone who it's not appropriate to give him fluids for.
It's not as relevant anyway.
Right.
If he dies from that first.
Right. It's unlikely that someone's going to die from dehydration. Right. It's unlikely. So food and... So in this regard, nutrition and hydration, it's hard to say, right? Like, if a person is actively dying, they actually don't necessarily need so much nutrition and hydration. Right, if they're dying within the day, they're not actually expending any energy, or much energy at all, and sometimes it could just be bad for them. So that's really sometimes a medical question, and sometimes Rav Adin get all excited because Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach are going to say, you always have to give food and water. But not when it's going to hurt the patient. Right? No, they never meant when it's going to hurt the patient. Right? So medically, it's not good to hydrate this patient because, you know, his kidneys aren't working, we're not initiating dialysis, and now he's fluid overloaded. Meaning, right, what happens if I give you an IV and your kidneys don't work so you can't make urine? What happens to your body?
Die.
Well, no, before you die. Why do you die? Not poisoned. You just get overflowed with fluid. You'll just get bloated. You're just taking in fluid and can't get rid of it. Right? I'm making your life worse. I'm making your heart pump harder because there's more pressure to pump against. That's not good. I've now worsened this patient's condition by giving him more fluid. So I certainly can't harm any patient, right? None of these things are going to do to make this patient's life worse. I'm not going to try to harm him. So by giving fluid, fluid and nutrition are often, it has to be done the right way so that you don't actually cause the patient any more harm or discomfort or suffering. Okay? Rav Moshe Herschler also has such a discussion like Rav Schechter. So I can usually alleviate pain. I can usually give drugs to alleviate pain. Dying from dehydration. I mean, we're talking about patients who are actively dying. Patients who are actively dying is not going to die from dehydration, right? They're going to die from something else first. This is going to be relevant when you're talking about an advanced stage dementia patient. So let's say someone has advanced stage dementia and they lie in bed and don't really do anything. They're not terminally ill. So what happens in today's society is that many, many doctors and bioethicists will tell you they're better off dead. And
their quality of life.
Quality of life, look, they have no meaning. So there's two arguments that are made. Either quality of life straight out, they have no quality of life because they're laying in bed and they can't take care of themselves independently, which the disability advocate groups in this country go ballistic about, because, and rightfully so, you've now said that disabled people or people with limited ability to do stuff are less alive than everybody else, and they're deserving of less care and less compassion and less therapy, which is a very dangerous statement. And B, they say, well, they might not even be aware. If they're not aware of their current state, then they're not considered persons. And someone who's not a person, I don't have to treat.
And it's also troubling.
It's terribly troubling because you have people like bioethicists like Peter Singer, for example, who equates, he says, well, animals can be people. Certain animals who have a self-awareness and consciousness are persons. And so you have animals that have a higher state of personhood than certain people lying in bed. Very scary thing. So you'll see, I haven't been doing this for very long. I understand my experience in med school is very limited. I've never seen doctors advocate, you know, we really, really, really got to keep this patient on the ventilator and keep him going. I've never seen that. I've seen very frequently trying to convince families, we should really stop doing what we're doing right now. Let's remove all therapy and let this patient die. He's better off dead. He's suffering. You have unconscious patients. I've heard doctors try to argue with the family that he has existential suffering. The patient is suffering existentially. Existentially is like the way you feel of being, right? Not epistemology. Existential, your existence in that suffering is a suffering. Existential suffering, which is psychic suffering, just being in that state is suffering. It's not a tough sell.
Really?
Not in this day and age. This sells to people. This sells to people. None of those people qualify as within this category. All these people are alive. These advanced dementia patients are very much alive. And when, right? And it's uncomfortable at this point if you're a med student there or you're involved with these cases, you have to make a decision of what to do, and you have to decide where your values and your ethics are and stand up for them, and it's not always simple. And so probably have to think about before. But this is a very prevalent attitude today, that we remove therapy from patients who can't get better. Right? We can't cure this guy's cancer, so let's just give up. And that's not okay. So first of all, we shouldn't give up because I don't care what's going on. I can still treat the patient. I can always make him more comfortable. I can give him painkillers. I can give him oxygen if he needs it. I can give him hemodialysis, which might make him feel better. I can do all sorts of things that might make him feel better. So I can never stop caring for a patient. That's certainly usser. You, even when you can remove all of these things, you still have to take care of the person's needs and make sure they're not suffering. So you can never abandon the patient. That's completely usser, according to the Torah and Halacha. You can never abandon the patient. That should be absolutely clear. But even otherwise, a lot of these, they're not dying. If the patient's not dying, then they don't qualify as any of these ghosts. They don't qualify in the Ramah's category. And that's a problem. So we're going to be focusing mostly on terminal cancer patients. A patient who knows that they're dying and is finally reached the end of the road, and there's actually nothing we can do to cure him, and he will likelihood die within a couple of days, no matter what we do. So that's all we're going to be referring to. So we're going to leave Rav Moshe Herzler out of it, because most people don't know who he is. Fine. So the third category is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein, and appears to be what most posts hold. It's you differentiate between medical needs versus basic needs. You'll notice we didn't say heroic versus ordinary efforts. That's a Catholic distinction. We don't differentiate between ordinary measures and extraordinary measures. We said between medical needs and basic needs. He says there are certain things that a person needs to live. Food, water, oxygen. That's not medicine. He says, even if you deliver it artificially, even if the food's coming in through a tube in his stomach, and the oxygen's coming into a tube in his throat, this is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He says, that's basic needs. You're never allowed to stop those. Unless it's in, right, again, that we're not harming the patient by continuing them. Right? Objectively harming the patient. He says, those are basic needs. You can't stop that. Right? You cannot stop his oxygen. You cannot stop his food. You cannot stop his fluids. You can't stop those things. He says, not only that, he has a... Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a line in the Nishmas Avraham. He says, Either fulfills the patient's basic needs. Or things that are accepted as routine. Mm-hmm. We've now added a lot of things.
Who said that?
Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And just so you know, the word in Hebrew is shigrati. It means routine. Shigrati, routine. So what kind of things are accepted as routine, he says? Insulin for a diabetic is routine. Antibiotics for an infection are routine. Hemodialysis for a kidney patient is routine. You can't stop those routine things. You can't stop that which he was living on for the last 5 years. He got insulin every single day. That's a basic need. That's routine for him. He's been getting hemodialysis every day, every three times a week for the last 6 months. You can't stop that. That's routine. That's part of his basic needs. Okay? He also thought the dialysis machine substitutes for his kidneys. That's a basic need. So what's not routine? What can you stop according to Rav Shlomo Zalman? What do you not have to do? Again, you can. What do you not have to do according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach?
Heart things.
What do you mean heart things?
Yeah, like all those things that have to do with heart.
It depends if it's routine. If he's living on pressors, then it's going to be routine. So what about a ventilator? Can you stop it?
No.
What about CPR? The CPR, that's not routine, and that's not a basic need. That's once he's out, you're going to do it. You don't have to do CPR, he says explicitly. He has two examples. You don't have to do CPR, and you don't have to do you don't have to do an amputation. Let's say a person has diabetes, ends up having gangrene in one of their limbs, in one of their toes, and gangrene can become infected and kill you because it can infect your whole body. The only way to stop that often is to amputate the leg, right? Excuse the leg. But you have to amputate the limb that's getting infected. So do you have to do that? He says that's certainly not routine. You don't amputate people's limbs normally. And that's not a basic need. That you don't have to do. But routine things and basic needs you have to fulfill. Okay? So One difference is in dialysis, this is a little bit careful. So a person is a kidney patient who has a kidney disease and he now has cancer and is dying. So he's been on dialysis for the last 5 years. The dialysis machine has effectively become his kidneys. It fulfills his basic needs. And for him, it's routine. He can't stop it. What about a patient who comes into the hospital, right? And he never had a kidney problem, but now he has cancer. He comes into the hospital, he's dying, and his kidney shut down. And we give him dialysis once or twice. He says, that's okay. That you don't have to continue. That's not routine for him, and it's not fulfilling a basic need. We just started that once or twice. Okay?
So routine is a relatively long-standing...
Something that has been happening. Like insulin, if the patient came in, all of a sudden his pancreas isn't working, you give him insulin once or twice, that's not it. He's talking about, where's that line? I don't know. He doesn't actually say. Right. Fine.
Shigrati
means routine, just so you need the word. If you see the word, you know what it means. So, at some point, though, the Rama would even say you can stop fulfilling basic needs, even become vase. He says if patient's suffering, all we're doing is keeping him alive by the medicine. If the medicine's not actually being effective and he's not being kept alive, you can passively withhold if you assume he's suffering. So Dr. Avram Steinberg writes that when his father was dying, Dr. Steinberg's father was dying, So I don't know from what it was. He writes it in his encyclopedia, though, and in an article. So he had some chronic illness, and he was dying, and he was on vasopressors. And he said as soon as the bag of vasopressors would empty, his father's blood pressure would plummet until they put in a new bag. And this was going on all night. So Dr. Avram went to Shlomo Zalman that night. They all work in the same. Dr. Avram and Dr. Steinberg work in the same hospital. So they continue doing it or not? So Dr. Avram said he went to Shlomo Zalman at like 1 in the morning and he asked him. He said he frequently went to him at 1 in the morning to ask him questions. So Shlomo Zalman was waiting for him. He called him, Shlomo was coming, and he told him, look, you're not actually treating the patient anymore, right? If his blood pressure is only being kept up so long as the bag is running, and the minute the bag is emptied, his blood pressure is bottoming out, that's completely external. You don't have to replace the next bag. But only in such a patient can you passively withhold. That was his distinction. In such a patient, you can passively withhold things. So you can never shut off a ventilator, and it's not food or water, which is like a basic need, but in this patient, you can passively withhold the pressors. And he died moments later.
I assume he was suffering greatly
from it, so Rav Moshe says every Goses is suffering. He said, this guy, he's definitely a Goses, right? He's definitely a Goses. He's being kept alive minute to minute by the presser. That's a Goses. You can passively withhold. That's what he said. Capacity to withhold the presser. You can never do anything active, but you can passively withhold the presser. So that's an important caveat to Rav Shlomo Zalman.
Is there any factor at all in terms of like doctors dealing with patients that are related to them?
Like Dr. Steinberg wasn't dealing with the patient, it's just he's writing about his own father.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't taking care of him. He happens to write a book about medical ethics, so he's included. A little bit, you have to assume. I mean, Dr. Steinberg is a very honest and wonderful person. He's the first to realize that he may have a vested interest.
Right.
So he didn't even want to go ask the question.
Right.
He didn't want to ask the question because he might think that he's presenting it not fairly because he want either way to go for his father. So he had someone else present the question. So he shouldn't even, there should be no bichshash that even that he's presenting it incorrectly. Fine. So then we'll talk about Rav Moshe in a moment. But first, Rav Eliyashiv, Rav Yosef Shalom Eliyashiv, who's Yibadal Chaim, he's alive today. Rav Moshe Shlema. So he thinks, also, you have to do everything to save a patient, and he also like, Rav Shlomo Zalman, you can't stop any of these things. Pretty much exactly alike. Okay? The difference between Rav Eliyashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman is, so they'll both say, look, when the patient's suffering, you can passively withhold certain things. Right? The question is, how do you know if the patient's suffering? So the patient tells you, look, I'm suffering. So then, right, he's uncomfortable and he's suffering. So Shlomo Zalman will say, okay. So at that point, maybe you could withhold the pressors. You could withhold certain things if you want. So these are all options. You're not mechuyev to do these things. You can choose to keep going, right? And Shlomo Zalman says that's the path of the tzaddikim. People who are close to Hashem should keep trying, even at suffering. But the halacha understands that not everyone's at that level. So he says when someone's suffering, so then you can passively withhold things. Okay, and what'll happen as you passively withhold things from the guy who tells me suffering? What'll happen to this guy eventually? I mean, he'll die, but before that, you don't have to be a doctor for this. What'll happen? I guess maybe you do. No, let's say he's suffering and you're passively withholding things. So now, slowly but surely, he's going to be dying. Right? He'll become unconscious. Right? He'll slowly maybe get unconscious. And what happens when he's unconscious? Is he probably still suffering? he's getting closer to death, or something sounding right, right? He's getting closer and closer to death. So certainly he can withhold things now, right? Rav Eliezer says, well, I don't know if he's suffering anymore. I only know when he's suffering when he's awake. So Rav Eliezer says, yeah, when he becomes unconscious, I now have to restart all those therapies, right? Rav Eliezer is saying the assumption that we can passively withhold therapy assumes that this patient is suffering. So long that he's suffering, that's true. But I only know that he's suffering when I know he's suffering objectively. When the guy slips into a coma because he's dying, I no longer know that he's suffering and I have to keep doing things. So the irony is that Shlomo Zalman will say, well, look, as he's getting closer and closer to death, so you can, if you can withhold before, you can withhold as it gets closer. Rav Eliezer is saying, as you're getting closer and closer to death, you may have to initiate more and more therapies. So Dr. Avram says he asked Rav Eliezer that. It's a little bit ironic. He said, so what? So it's ironic. That's a din. Okay.
Then you shouldn't actually ever do that.
You can withhold while he's conscious.
No, that would be worse. Like, you're just bringing him into a coma and then you're going to end up keeping him alive.
Right. So you want, from a medical perspective, does this make sense? So look, well, if he's going to be in the coma, then he won't realize.
Yeah, so like, you shouldn't bring him to... there's no point in even taking it.
Right, it seems like a little bit silly. It's also going to be less effective. Meaning, look, as opposed to getting closer and closer to death, the therapies are going to be less and less effective too, right? So you have to figure it out. So, I don't know what people do practically. I think most people follow Rav Zalman on this. So, let's just do Rav Moshe Feinstein. He said, so it's also Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is... he was posting in New York, and his influence in American halacha, in American practice, is tremendous, and so it's important to understand what he's saying. So we said his view of kol mamono means 100% but no more. Right? So if a person's suffering greatly, you can passively withhold certain things. He says also, though, you can withhold medical therapies. You can't stop his food, his water, or his oxygen. He says those explicitly. Okay? Except you can't withhold O2, food, and fluid. You may not withhold those things, even passively. Right? Now, again, assuming that we're actually promoting this patient's health in some way. If he's getting fluid overloaded and his heart's starting to work less, you don't have to do it. If the food's not going down because he has a blockage and you can't get the food down his throat and he's just... it's just coming up, so you don't have to do it, right? I mean, using common sense, or most of it was just giving normal limitations. So he says that a patient is suffering greatly, you don't have to actively treat, you can passively withhold, and you can right, and you don't have to continue that therapy, except for these things. Because he assumed that a goses is suffering. Every goses he thinks is suffering, and therefore, if a goses is suffering... if a goses is suffering, so then you can passively withhold from these things. Now the problem is that Rav Moshe explains, well, why don't you have to give? So he says, why not? He doesn't say Rav Shlomo Zalman's thing of basic needs versus medical needs. He says, well, food is a basic need. He says food is a basic need, and when you don't eat, you suffer. If you don't have food, that will cause suffering. If you don't have food and water, that will certainly cause suffering. I don't care what the doctors say. And therefore, you have to support this person because food and nutrition helps you be strong and healthy. And without that, you'll be less healthy and less strong. And I can't let you do that. I can't harm you in that way. Taking out the food is going to harm you, actively harm you, not just not help you, but will harm you. So is that true or not true? So it's hard to know. It doesn't sound very true nowadays. So you have to wonder how we meant that to be taken. By oxygen, by respirators, he also thinks that turning off a respirator will actively harm a patient. He says by food, the food makes a person stronger and they have to do that. He says the respirator, the oxygen, will, if you turn it off, you will make the patient die faster, meaning as opposed, it will actually cause him faster to die that he was on the ventilator and taken off than had he not been on the ventilator ever. Right? That taking off the ventilator causes some active harm to this patient. So you have to know what does that mean, but
he was dependent upon it.
Right. So it's no, but something. So Robert Black tried to explain that back in the 60s or 70s, there was something called physiological trauma that they thought existed. That when you're shutting off a ventilator, you're actively causing harm. So maybe that's what Rav Moshe meant. Unclear. Halacha l'maaseh, Rav Moshe says, you can passively withhold everything but oxygen, food, and fluid. Meaning you can't shut off a ventilator, you can't stop food, and you can't stop fluid. We'll just do the last shita, is number 4. And that's Rabbi Life. And it's Eliezer. What do you think they're going to say based on who they think you're talking about? Right, Rabbi Life and it's Eliezer. Rabbi Life is talking about real ghost age who almost practically doesn't exist. Eliezer thinks you're talking about someone without Chiyus Atzmi. So what about someone who's not an actual ghost age because he doesn't really exist, or someone with any Chiyus Atzmi? Both of them will say you have to do everything always unless the patient is suffering immeasurably. Right? So Rabbi Life is pretty clear that you always have to do almost everything. You have to do CPR, you have to put a ventilator on. And if the patient's suffering, so give him morphine. Make him not suffer, and then save him. Now the only room will be, well, what if the morphine's not going to help? So you have certain types of bone cancers, for example, where it's terribly painful and no pain therapy is going to help. We'll have to talk about it. Right? Now he'll be unconscious of the patient if I give him enough morphine. I give him enough fentanyl. The patient's going to be unconscious. He says, so what? Make the patient unconscious, cure him of his pain, and then keep him alive. Tzitz Eliezer says the same thing. He says, every moment of life is important, and Tzitz Eliezer says, even if you're suffering. Right? The only time that Tzitz Eliezer imagines you withholding therapy is when you have no intrinsic life force. Short of that, do everything. Alright, Blythe puts the line a little bit more on the other side of things. He says, well, if you're suffering so immeasurably that I can't control it, then we'll talk about passively withholding things. But short of that, you have to do everything always. So we have 4 shitas. You can remove everything. You can passively withhold as long as you don't actively kill. Right? You can never actively kill, but you have to explain one. Rishonos Amalei and Rav Moshe Feinstein said, you can passively withhold therapies but not basic needs, meaning nothing, everything but food, water, and oxygen. And Rav Blatt and Tzitzelian are saying, effectively, you have to do everything you can at all costs to keep the guy alive. We'll review the last two again next time, and then we'll move on to another topic, I promise.